So, this morning, the alignment of the three inner spaces, which it's not going to be too, like, what is the three inner spaces? Well, mind, heart, and soul. So, not too off there with something, well, what's this about, you know? However, the Bible studies are going to, and I am calling them Bible studies this morning, since we have such a, you may have noticed we go from Matthew to Revelation and we back up to Ezekiel and to Daniel, and that all this ties in together. After all, life is of that infinite moment of no past, no future, and no present. So often these stories have a continuum through and of each other, no matter where they're actually placed. You know, which story comes first, which one comes second. They all become a learning experience unto each other, and that's what's beautiful about these stories. They're a great spiritual psychology that is of the oneness of our being with divine mind. And to look into all this and how I bring this all together is the importance of the mind, heart, and body. Mind, body, and soul being, I'm sorry, mind, soul, and heart being as one body. We are created at this point in time to exist like this. So I know that it's perfect to whatever degree of understanding I have or don't have. My faith tells me that it's a perfect idea. And the more I grasp this and practice this, the more I can live and have my being in a way that we would call Christ mind. And it's important that this is also about healing. And it's a lot about healing, not only from the past, but also healing from the future. Because how often do we take our thoughts and put them into things that have yet not happened? And how often have those thoughts been negative thoughts on things that have not yet happened? And though I'm paraphrasing, one of my favorite quotes from Mark Twain was, "Of all the calamities in my life, most of them never even existed." It's a lot of time spent with worry and stress and discontent and fear on things that never even happened except for what I made up in my head. So the big question is, why make them up in our head? So in the stories, and some of these, and I'll come back a little bit into that, this very first story from Matthew, when the unclean spirit has gone out of man, he walketh through the dry places seeking rest and finding none. Then he saith, I will return unto my house from whence I came out. And when he arrives, he finds that the place has been emptied and swept and garnished. But then he continues the more to the story is that when he returns to this house, he returns sevenfold to who he was. In other words, they would say seven demons more than what he had. And he returns to this house that's been swept and cleansed and garnished and is worse than he was before. And part of this story, what it goes on to tell, is that he didn't put anything in the house. He didn't fill it with anything good. It was just cleansed and swept and garnished. And so it left him more susceptible to that which was tearing him apart in the first place. And since he really didn't do anything than just clean the place up, he had no strength or anything whatsoever to bring into his life. And of course, the house we're talking about is this house. I found it very interesting because myself, in the 12 steps of AA, the second step, came to believe that a power could restore me to sanity. It concludes in the last couple of paragraphs saying, we have not yet allowed God's grace to enter in our house and clear away the obsession. Now, I can clean the place up all I want, but if I have not allowed truth to enter in and become what is part of my being, then what good is a well-swept place that's been cleansed and garnished? So in this story, it is the emptiness that leaves us to repeat. You know, just this cleaning things up is not enough. It's part of the facade. It's so easy to put on a new outfit or paint the house and let while the plumbing's like rusting away. You know, and say, look at my brand new place. It's nothing new. It's just a facade. And so this story is about a facade. And how it ties in to the rest of this, it kicks into Revelation. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. We normally don't hear birds described that way in the Bible, but here they are saying that. You know, usually they're an expression of a higher consciousness. Well, what kind of higher consciousness? A good higher consciousness? A bad higher consciousness? Just a higher consciousness doesn't mean anything. It's like, what kind of higher consciousness? And as we know, Babylon, the word Babel comes out of it. They were very lofty in their great and eloquent poetry and their beautiful songs, but they weren't really living in the divinity of what they were talking about. You can even back up into the very first story with Abraham. Shortly after he dies, within just the next generation, cousins are at war with each other. But they're okay when he was around. They weren't okay when he left. What happened? What did they not do? Or a lot of people tend to follow Jesus, which, yes, follow Jesus, but does that mean just follow him? Or follow him in his ways and his teachings and practice them? Because to just follow, I'm going to set myself up for a heap of hurt. And I'm probably going to turn against the person because, well, that didn't work. Well, I didn't do anything. And therein lies the problem. So here we have Babylon coming to a complete crash. And that's in Revelation. Now it backs all the way up into Ezekiel, and it talks about all the fowls of heaven made their nests in the boughs, and under the branches did all the beasts of the field bring forth their young. And under his shadow dwelt all great nations. Now the his is a small h. We're not talking about God. We're talking about the Assyrian, what they call the Assyrian cedar of Lebanon. Man's world. A creation of the mighty tree of knowledge of good and evil. And so now in this mighty tree of good and evil, it has shadowed and brought forth the beasts that live in there, and the tree, and the birds that find their way to live in these trees, these big, beautiful branches, and this big, strong, earthly tree of knowledge, which, as it says earlier, and even the birds became unclean and hateful, and the beasts just dwell below. It concludes, and in this story, what happens, so I can explain to why Daniel comes up next, God's wrath, so to speak, as they put it, eventually comes and destroys all the trees in the area. Not just that one, but every living tree in the area. And only leaves the river flowing. And of course that would represent, often the water represents a spiritual path. He leaves the spiritual path there, but destroys all the trees. Except in Daniel, nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven. That stump is the remnant from which something good can grow. You don't just kill the whole thing off. And often we have the remnant showing up throughout the Bible. It was the remnant who rebuilt the walls every time they came down in Jerusalem. And here we talk about and leave the stump. So it could exist in the tender grass. So they could be wet with the dew of heaven. That is the remnant. Remains the remnant, so that newness may grow from it. So it's pretty powerful how these stories all tie into each other and what they're actually talking about. They were very poetically tied into nature when they were talking about this deep spiritual psychology and the lessons we could learn from this. You know, just a facade is not the answer. Babylon failed with the facade. You know, the man who cleaned his house and swept it up failed because of the facade. The mighty trees of knowledge eventually fall, but the remnant always remains. And that was something I remember Dr. Salazar teaching me. We talked about the remnant. The remnant always remains. And that is through all stories. There's always the remnant who returns and builds from the truth. And so that's why they don't rip everything out to shreds. So it's a pretty powerful story. So then we take something like that and look at it into the self. How am I a remnant unto my own self? How, what part of me is the tree of life, and what part of me is the tree of knowledge of good and evil? You know, and on a daily basis, that can be brought back to the remnant, where I can allow the dew of heaven to allow that remnant to start growing again. And that's something that's practiced on a daily basis. In the mind, heart, and body, we look at these three inner spaces, and the mind and the heart, there's very positive things in life that are very healthy for it, like art and music, dance, fasting, nature, games, etc. All these kinds of things, which bring apart our ability to live in a much healthier state. And very early on in the fundamentals of divine science, it teaches this, how we find and consider literature and the arts and things of that sort a very important part of human nature. You know, and we speak very well, but we even say, learn as you can, learn truth from as many different ways as you can, because you're going to see it being said in many different forms, and that'll be only to your own benefit. When I limit myself, it could create a lot of extra unnecessary suffering. So it is important to recognize truth when we hear it, just as much as it's important to recognize the babbling of the Babylonians, speaking lofty words of truth, but they have just all they have is a house that is being swept and cleansed and garnished, and have placed nothing in there other than lofty, beautiful things that will not get me through anything. It's ironic that I also, in some of the readings I've been going into, and they talk about the heart. And of something most of us, if not all of us, go through. It talks about the heart, the broken heart. And in Luke 2:35, it says, Simon to Mary. It says, a sword will pierce your heart so that the secret thoughts of many will be laid bare. That it's in this healing, we learn a deeper compassion for all of life, and so therefore, everything. And as part of our healing is our compassion. Our healing is that ability to have this deep faith of awareness. You know, and a lot of times people will choose hatred and bitterness to patch up a broken heart. And you see it in the rottenness, and there's no healing that has taken place. So, you know, it talks about all that because it's a part of living on this planet. You know, but the compassion comes through understanding all the more. It comes through a love that continues to live within us, a deeper love, a more infinite source of love. Rather than just, well, I love doing this or I love doing that. It's, you know, one of the ways I can explain it is well, for me, and I'm so grateful I'm in divine science, you know, and I almost did not return to Christianity. I was going off into other things. I was so, like, enough of all that Christian nonsense. And then I began to see the truth of places like unity and divine science, and I said, well, this is what I'm seeking in the first place, and here it is. And it kind of brought me in a, you know, round circle way that I didn't just abandon an old faith and just have it under my breath as like something to curse once in a while. Instead, I found answers and was able to find my healing, having grown up in this country, in this part of the country, and growing up in a Christian faith. You know, so it was important for me to go through that. But a lot of Western Christians, as Mr. Rohr from the book I'm looking at, Breathing Underwater, points out, who's been a priest, Franciscan monk, I should say, for over 40 years, He says many Western Christians are plagued with a Plato body and soul concept that we are, it is a war belief of body and soul. He says, but then Jesus actually taught us that the body and soul are already one. So what's going on? What is it that is not being taught or studied or practiced, especially by leaders? That if they're not teaching it, but that there's a war between the body and soul. Now, I study the Bible. I've been studying it for a long time. I have no idea what they're talking about when they say all that stuff. Outside of they maybe want to control people. But other than that, I can't see what they're talking about because it's not in these teachings. It's really not to be found. You know, there is, again, this word triune, which we talk about. There is a triune oneship with the body and mind and soul that will take revenge when we don't treat it as one. And so disorders start to come out, a compulsiveness and addictions start to pour out because we're not allowing ourselves to live in this oneship. The body responds, starts screaming. And if I don't pay attention to it, it gets louder and the results become worse and worse and worse. And all the body's doing is trying to, like, the body's talking and saying, hey, knock it off. And we're not listening. And so all these compulsions and all these addictions develop out of it. Not to mention other things. You know? Simply because we're not listening. I'm going to go and stay headstrong in my destructive ways and praise Jesus for it. No, thank you. I refuse to be a part of that. It's enough work as it is practicing in this truth. I sure don't need work that's only going to mess me up. So anyway, when it comes down to this, again, you know, with things that I've read, and I've always been very fond of the Tao Te Ching, and because it's so Christ-like for me. So I want to talk a little bit about what I just read from this Bible and everything through what I've read in the Tao. And again, the Tao means the way, the light. And what did Jesus always say? I am the way, I am the light. And so the same principles are at work here. And it says, the Tao does not take sides, but gives birth to saints and sinners. And of course, we read about how the same rain, the same sun shines on the harvest of the sinner as it does on the harvest of the good one of good faith. The Tao does not see one thing as beautiful and another thing as ugly. To only see something, some things as good, that creates ugly in our consciousness. That's pretty deep. When mastering this, one acts without doing, teaches without saying what to do, accepts that which comes and goes, and when the master's work is done, she forgets about it. And the Tao, by the way, often speaks, since they see the birth of creation as being feminine. So they often reference to she and her rather than he and him, but yet they're still talking about the same thing. But that's the important thing, forgets about it. It's like it's done. So what am I going to do, obsess on it? Am I going to keep running it through my head? You know, this is a part where I'm going to back up a little bit, where I was talking about part of the healing is letting go of the past and the future in our thoughts. There comes a time to forget about it. You know? And it's an important thing to do. I remember I told this story years ago, a friend of mine who borrowed one of my guitars, a nylon string, classical guitar, for one gig. And I needed it back because I was using it here on Sunday. And Friday comes along, Saturday comes along. I'm calling him, he's not answering. Sunday comes. I brought in my other guitar, but, you know, I was really at the time enjoying that nylon string. Anyway, he's not returning my calls, so now I'm getting really upset. And I'm starting to have really horrible thoughts. You know, one of my thoughts, and he had moved, so I didn't know where he moved to. And nowadays, we contact each other through cell phones, for the most part, so I can't even trace it through a home line. So I don't know where he is. I actually called his ex-girlfriend. And she had no idea where he was. And then I'm having these thoughts like, you know, if I saw him right now the way I felt, and I might have done it, if I saw him and got my hands on the guitar, I might have taken it and then smashed it to pieces and go, here, you keep it. You know? Because he stole from me. And I was very upset, and I prayed on this. Because me, as man, as human, that was the best I could do. Revenge. You know? Right, willing to destroy something which was precious to me just to, like, get my point across to him. You know, what's the old saying? I drink the poison because I'm in hopes to kill that other person. I'll drink the poison. You know, it's like, I mean, it's all around insanity from the start, from the first idea. But anyway, I prayed on it, and I prayed on it. And then I heard a voice in my head that said, give it to him as a gift. And I was like, phew. I was like, well, how about this? How about you give it to him as a gift, and I'll back it up. And I don't hear any. It's usually very, when something that comes into my head, it doesn't add anything. It just went, give it to him as a gift. How about you give it? Give it to him as a gift. And I finally thought about it, and that's what I did. And when I accepted that, the forgiveness flowed through me. And all that horrible stuff, just I felt it go right through my body and down into the ground. And I called him one more time. I said, look, don't worry about it. Keep the guitar. I'd like to give it to you as a gift. I was 99.8% there. And I say that because I concluded with, but should a day come that you want to give it to me as a gift, feel free to. But I really forgave. And the reason I know this is because when times came about when I would start to think about it just haphazardly and I start to get upset, my voice would just kick her in and go, oh, no. You gave it to him as a gift, remember? And everything in me went, oh, yeah. And the negativity just left, just bam, gone. There was no debate. So that was very powerful. What really becomes very powerful is that a year later he calls me and returns the guitar. You know, and with all his apologies that he wanted to call me, but he was so ashamed because time kept going by, and I'm like, well, that doesn't help anything, but I get it, you know, and it's just a whole big song and dance of a very troubled soul, which I didn't have to be fused to that. I didn't have to be fused to his consciousness because I lovingly forgave and gave it to him lovingly as a gift. And that word love has to be in there. Because I need to completely remove from me all the other nonsense. The tree of life stuff. The duality stuff. That all had to be cleansed. If I wanted to have really peace of mind with this. And I did. And then it was returned to me a year later. So in the Tao, again, it also another thing I like. It says, color blinds the eye. Sound deafens the ear. Thoughts numb the taste, and desires wither the heart. The master observes the world, but trusts the inner vision, allowing things to come and go, and keep the heart open as the sky. And if that isn't what, I mean, let me put it that, that's the same stuff Jesus was teaching, the exact same stuff, the stuff of the way and the light. And I remind myself, because I see how obliterated a lot of the teachings have been taught, and I have to remind myself, that's not what he did. That's not what Jesus taught. It's not what his disciples carried on. But it all became manufactured and turned into a business, and it became deeply diluted in the tree of life of good and evil. Whereas this kind of stuff can only be practiced, I mean in the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but this kind of stuff can only be practiced in the tree of life and nowhere else. It's just not going to work very well. It might have niceties to it, but that's not what this is about. It's not about the facade. So, in a nutshell, I'm going to close with 1 Thessalonians, with I believe was one of Paul's first letters, which sums all this up. May the God of peace make you whole and holy. May you be kept safe in body, heart, and mind, and thus ready for the presence. God has called you and will not fail you. And so it is. Amen.